Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in, welcome in. This is Winning Cures Everything. I am one of your hosts, Gary Seegers. This is the interview of the week, and we'll have a better name for that eventually, I'm sure. But as of right now, that is what we're rolling with. The show, as always, brought to you by Tunica, Mississippi, the South's premier sports gambling destination. They've got six incredible sports books. You can find more information about them over at tunicatravel.com. You can find more information about us, all of our picks, previews, videos, podcasts, social media networks, platforms, whatever. You can find everything, along with the Pick'em contest, et cetera, over at winningcureseverything.com. You follow us on Twitter, at winningcures. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/winningcureseverything. If you're on YouTube, hit subscribe. Leave some comments. Tell us what you like about the interviews, what questions you would ask, because we're going to have our guests on again this week, of course, Chris Felica from ESPN's College Game Day and the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. You can read his stuff on The Chalk over at ESPN.com. That's part of ESPN Plus, ESPN Insider, whatever it is now. But yeah, Felica is always generous with us. He comes on with us every year at least a couple of times. This year, of course, we've got some crazy stuff going on in college football. We're talking about a whole bunch of different stuff. So without further ado, here is the man himself. Here is the Bear, Chris Felica. On today's show, we've got Chris Felica, the Bear from ESPN's College Game Day and the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. You can find him on Twitter at Chris Felica. Buddy, how you doing? Everything going okay?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. We're getting set for the most intriguing and most focused upon time of the year. Playoff rankings will be out in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure a lot more conversation and debate will be garnered in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, we're doing good.
Well, that's wonderful. Looks like you had a fantastic time in Happy Valley last week. Now, obviously, college football atmospheres, there's a ton of good ones across college football. That's a whiteout at Happy Valley with stakes that high. That's got to be, what, like top three, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. The scene for the game is pretty incredible. They get air into it. And they get after it, and it's one of those things that in person it looks awesome, and TV does a great job of capturing it as well. But yeah, that's a great spot. I mean, Clemson's atmosphere is a great spot as well. LSU at night is a great spot. So I mean, I have to, just off the top of my head, those would probably be the top three that I would look towards.
All right, so those are bucket lists that we have got to take care of, because look, Chris and I have not done anything like that. We went to Chicago. I was texting you about this. We went to Chicago last week for Ohio State Northwestern, and I was really surprised at how just awesome the atmosphere around Northwestern was, even for a not great football team this season. Like, they really get after it.
Yeah, when we went there for game day for the last time that Ohio State went there, the scene around there is pretty good, and I think it probably also helped that there were a lot of Ohio State fans as well, that they brought a little bit of the atmosphere as well. But no, we had a really good time and a really good turnout for our show the one time we went to Evanston as well. So that's not surprising.
Now, You of course have gone to Evanston. You've gone all over the place. You're going to Brookings this week, right? South Dakota.
Yep.
Explain to me, if you can, the process for game day's location selection. And the reason I'm asking this question, like, you've told us before, there's a list of possibilities at the beginning of the season. Obviously, every season changes once we get into this part of the year. But when we heard on the podcast that you guys were having to rent houses for Penn State, Michigan. we were surprised that like hotels weren't booked way ahead of time, especially for like a matchup like that. So how exactly, if you can give us any kind of details, because I'm just really curious about it. How does this work as you get later in the season?
Yeah, I think in terms of it, with the housing stuff, with the hotel stuff, again, I can't speak to our entire operations and travel departments, but I do think that there are a lot of hotels that, in terms of booking, like with cancellation policies, and if we don't show up, we're not allowed to hold them. We have to pay for rooms. So I do think there's probably a budgetary consideration there that comes up with not being able to just like advance hold the hotel. That makes total sense business wise for the hotel itself. If they have a bunch of fans traveling in, that they want to get a commitment as opposed to, yeah, maybe College Game Day is going to come, so we're going to hold it free of charge for them. So that, I mean, that's not conducive for them. But you're right. I've talked about it as well. Like before the year starts, I'll put together a list of games that I think are probably like the most likely games in terms of being the biggest that week that we could likely be at. And I mean, gosh, if I would have put money on a couple of weeks back, I probably would have bet ridiculous amounts of money that we would have been in Columbus this week for Wisconsin, Ohio State. And I think what wound up happening was Wisconsin's loss as a massive favorite against Illinois kind of tempered the enthusiasm of, yeah, it's still like a top 15 matchup or whatever, but do we really think Wisconsin's going to go in there and win off of that effort? Now, I understand we don't necessarily always go to a game because of like the perception of whether a game's going to be competitive or close or can the underdog win. But I think it was a little bit of a buzzkill, the fact that Wisconsin doesn't have that undefeated record anymore. And obviously, I think if you look at LSU-Auburn, I think, again, I can't speak for the ultimate decision being made. But I mean, I'm just talking about the games that I know were in the mix. I mean, LSU-Auburn's obviously a massive game. But I think if you look, I mean, the show was just in Baton Rouge 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Odds are we're going to be in Tuscaloosa in 2 weeks. I mean, do you really want to do three LSU games in 5 weeks? I think it's probably not good for the show to be constantly right around one team. And then if Michigan would have beaten Penn State, I think it's probably a really good chance we could have been in State College in Ann Arbor this week. So I think it was kind of like a perfect storm. And then Saturday night, I'm just sitting there looking like, Is there any other place that we could have gone or could be considering that might be worthwhile? And I'm looking at the FCS games, Division two games, Division three games, and just kind of going about. I'm like, yeah, well, you know what? North Dakota State on the road. I'm like, wow, they're actually playing the last team that beat them, 27 or 28 game winning streak. It's a place we haven't been. They're number three in the country, so we got to kick the decision makers kicked a lot of it around and said, you know what? Let's pull the trigger. Let's go there and do something different. It'll be a little, not like, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people on Saturday morning that are expecting us to be in Columbus, and that's fine. I mean, I'm sure there'll probably be some Ohio State people that are disappointed, but I think
they'll all be all right.
Yeah, exactly. I think in watching the show, ultimately it's a big backdrop, but there's going to be plenty of Ohio State talk, plenty of LSU Auburn talk.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty of Notre Dame, Michigan, plenty of LSU, plenty of CFP. You're going to get the same show you'd get, just at a cool little different location.
That's it. So LSU-Auburn, of course, is going to have SEC Nation that'll show up on campus. You brought up some very interesting stuff, and I'll go ahead and jump to this because you know we're based out of Memphis, and you know we're fired up about our football team and all of that. This is a national show that we do, but we're still Memphis boys. So any chance that we can get to talk about this?
I'm so mad at myself last week, by the way. I'm so angry.
Hey, we were all over Tulane.
I could see that result coming, and I hate when I hop on a side, like just like with Wisconsin, Michigan State a couple of weeks back.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I kind of like Michigan State plus the points, but I could see this being 23-3, and you still take Michigan State. Like last week, I really think Tulane is good. God, but Memphis is going to be pissed off after the way they lost the Temple game. They got blown out last year by Tulane, but I'm still going to jump in and take Tulane plus the points anyway.
Oh, yeah.
We were in the same boat, Bear. We all kind of gave up on our Tigers after one loss, just typical terrible fans that we are. And we were all jumping on the Tulane bandwagon as well.
That's the, so to get into this, all the stuff that you just talked about, you mentioned, you know, you don't want to go see the same team too many times. You like going to places that you haven't been. You know, we're just going to toss it out there. You got SMU Memphis next week.
Yeah. It's in the mix.
How is it a real possibility? Like, go ahead and kill the dreams if you're going to kill them.
No, there's no killing of any dreams. No, it's a possibility. I mean, you guys have the same access to the schedule I have.
I think there's a
really good chance that the game is going to wind up being the ABC primetime game. I don't know who the ultimate call is going to be and what's going to go into that, but I think in terms of the schedule and the possibilities of the matchup, I think if you have an undefeated SMU team, it's a team that hosting them, that's a pretty exciting team in itself.
It could end up being in the top 25 next week.
Correct. Yeah. We had a Cincinnati UCF game in primetime last year from the American, so it's certainly not unprecedented. I think there's probably a good chance that game will wind up with Chris and Kirk on the call. And look, you got Oregon, USC as a possibility. You got the cocktail party as a possibility. Your game's a possibility. So we'll just have to see how the chips fall and where we lie after Saturday night. But no, it isn't like some unrealistic possibility that we could wind up there next week.
It's super excited about the possibility. Now, obviously, both teams got to go out and win this week. But yeah, I mean, it's the perfect setup in Memphis. Like, they've got Tiger Lane, this gigantic. Have you ever been to the Liberty Bowl Stadium?
I have not.
It's old. It's the last place the Bear Bryant coached. It's, you know, there's a lot of really cool stuff about it. The sight lines are great, but it is definitely old. But they have spruced this thing up, and they've got this gigantic tailgating area now. It's fascinating. So I would love to be able to see how it would all set up, because they've set it up perfect for this kind of thing.
They've got space. I know that.
They've definitely got that. So let's talk about some sports betting stuff. You started out miserably the same way that I did this season. And then you caught fire. Now, last week, we're just going to wipe that one off. Is what it is.
Exactly.
I'm having trouble catching teams in the right spots. How did you get off the schneid and hit such a streak there? Do you change anything when a season starts off as poorly as it did? How do you change the way that you're looking at games, or do you?
I really didn't. I just continued looking at the same types of numbers and stats and situations and spots that I've always looked at. I think using that, you don't want to be like the BCS. Remember the BCS used to change every year and overreact to, oh, well, the quality of the win component didn't work this year. Let's get rid of that. Let's add it for the win component. Oh, well, that didn't work. You know, I think if you change something, just opening yourself up to following up a bad run. But I think if you stay with what you're used to doing and looking at some efficiency numbers, trusting your power ratings, looking at certain spots in the schedule for certain teams, I think if you stay true to what's gotten me so far in the last 2 years, I think that's ultimately what happened. I didn't react. I knew, and ultimately it's going to come back. I didn't expect a ridiculous run like I had in the comp going 12-0 over a 3 week stretch, but I'll take it. But yeah, and then this weekend, yeah, if I could trade like one bad week for three good ones the rest of the way, I mean, sign me up for that for the next 2 months of the year, that's for sure. But no, I think that it's just the key for any sports better. I mean, people know, who do you guys know? You go through, everyone's going to go through a ridiculously bad stretch, and hopefully over the course of the marathon of the season or the year, it's all going to come out in the wash. It's either going to be pretty close to even or come out a little bit ahead.
And so we're moving into, what is it, week 9 now? So I've gone through 8 weeks, and I've got 2 winning weeks in 8 weeks. Like, I'm not doing great, so I do have to work
on
that.
I will say this, though. I don't know if you're necessarily alone there. Like, I've had numerous conversations with a couple of different buddies of mine and people I respect, and like they found it harder and harder to find an edge with their numbers in terms of, especially where it goes and where it closes. Like, they haven't found very much value at all this year. And I think the whole key with another, with one of my buddies is just trying to, he's really, really just trying to beat the opening number. And sometimes that works, sometimes it does. Like one of the games this week, I'm going to be curious to see where it winds up and how the game goes is the TCU Texas game. I think there were a ton of people that were surprised when TCU opened up favorites, now flipped to Texas being favorites. So we'll see if that move across zero works out for the book or works out for the better.
Now, so let's talk about some of the stuff this week. Wisconsin, Ohio State is sitting at 14.5. I think it opened at, 14, I guess? And I assumed that this line was going to open at probably 13 if Wisconsin had beaten Illinois. And then I thought I was going to get crazy value with Ohio State, you know, 16, 17, somewhere around there. And I could just take the Badgers and go that way. Do you feel like, looking at the stats for Wisconsin, like, they still, I mean, time of possession, they were up. The only thing that cost them that game really was turnovers and not being aggressive enough. You think the Badgers got a chance this weekend?
I don't think they can win the game, but look, I'm not looking to get in front of the Ohio State cover train. I stood in front of that OFC train last week. That didn't work out too well. But you're right. I think there is going to be a little bit of an overreaction. Your number was pretty much spot on. I remember having that. During the show last week, I was texting Matt Lindemann out at Circa, and he said, because we were talking about the potential for the Ohio State-Wisconsin game this week, and he said, yeah, probably around Ohio State, around 12 or 13 or so, and that was right. And I think probably if you like Wisconsin or you want to wait it out, this could be a situation where there is a little bit of an overreaction and maybe the number comes up some more. But I know people probably have that Big Ten championship game in mind, the Ohio State won the title, but a couple years back, this was a close game in the Big Ten championship game with another really good Ohio State team. So, again, I'm not looking to hop in front of Ohio State, but if I had to play this game, if you can get a 14.5 out there, or maybe you want to wait it out to see if it goes 15, you could do that. But if I had to play the game, I'd look at maybe taking Wisconsin plus the 14.5.
Now, you actually saw Ohio State when they played against Nebraska. And that was the same kind of deal that we sat and watched in person on Friday night against Northwestern. I was not super impressed.
I want to apologize for a little bit of sawing that's going on in my development right now. It appears they chose the absolute perfect time to begin sawing and cutting out and redoing the entire siding on my deck. So I'm going to try to go to a quiet room here as far away as possible.
No worries.
But we'll see if we can deal.
No worries. So I was not overly impressed. I didn't feel like Ohio State was just overwhelming. Like, I think their speed and their talent is, but as far as being dominant in the trenches and everything, I think that they can be had there. And Chris, like, Giannini, you tell me if I'm wrong here. Like, when we were watching that game, I didn't feel like this was a dominant line. Like,
let me tell you what I saw in the game, Bear. We watched this game, great seats, great tight lines, and Northwestern's offensive line consistently opened up massive, massive holes, and they were able to break off 8-9 yard runs, but they're only 8 or 9 yard runs because they don't have speed on the offense. I just think, man, if this is Wisconsin's offensive line, which is substantially better than Northwestern's, I mean, they're not even playing the same sport. And then you've got the running back speed of Wisconsin. Those are touchdowns. I mean, they're just six and nobody's catching those guys, even though Ohio State has a ton of speed. I felt like they got moved around a lot. If Wisconsin has a chance to win this game, all I kept saying was they're going to hold the ball, they're going to run the ball, and the problem is are they going to score too quickly with some of these runs busting wide open?
Yeah, I can't remember. I think there was one run I remember specifically in the first half with Bowser where I think he kind of slipped and went down. I know he had a lot of room. I think where Ohio State obviously is just so much better. Just talent, just pure raw talent.
Oh yeah,
and speed. I think that's where they're gonna, like, that secondary is ridiculously good. Chase Young is unblockable. The receivers this year are so much better than what they've had depth wise, especially with. That's not fair. I think Justin Fields is probably a better thrower than what JT Barrett had. I'm trying to think back to those Barrett years, because they had good receivers, especially when they won the national title in 14. But I just don't know if the Barrett was necessarily the best quarterback for them moving forward in 15 and 16. And so, I think athletically is where they come in. But I could see that happen, and I think that's why they had so much trouble in the playoff against Clemson when they played them. And I mean, the Clemson defensive line just completely dominated them up front and blew that game open. So I moving forward, are they going to face a team like that could really expose them, the defensive line against the offensive line, on the flip, and really blow up that offense? We'll see. I mean, I don't know if Michigan's going to be able to do that, or this week if Wisconsin on the flip side of their defensive line is going to be able to blow up their offense. So if they wind up facing a team that is really good up front and can disrupt that timing and make Fields a little rattly, I certainly think their offense could be disrupted a little bit. But I don't know if that's ultimately going to happen this week, but we'll see. I mean, you guys bring up a good point about the Wisconsin offensive line controlling a little bit of line scrimmage and maybe turning some clock, and if that helps keep Ohio State's offense off the field, that's the more the better.
You got that right.
The philosophy that I've heard a couple of times and a couple of different people say this year, mostly in talking about NFL, but the philosophy is the exact same. The best way to play defense is to not play defense. That's just it. Because there are no great defenses out right now anymore. In college football, LSU, Bama, Clemson, they're not like the juggernauts they used to be.
No, Clemson statistically, if you look at their defense, statistically, I think they're better than what they've had in recent years. But still, at the same time, while they have been great so far, like, we knew Cleveland Farrell and Christian Wilkins and Bryant and Dexter, Dexter Lawrence, we knew those guys could beat Alabama, could beat Ohio State, could beat Oklahoma. We don't know that this group right now can go to a playoff and beat Alabama or LSU. I think they can. I think their linebackers and their secondary are better than anything they've had in recent years. So we'll see if these young new linemen are up to the task if and when they do wind up reaching the playoff.
All right, I have a question here, and I don't want to keep you too long, Bear, but I do want to ask you about Clemson specifically. They are the defending champs. If we find that there's not a single ranked opponent when they finish this season at all left on their schedule, and you've got a one-loss Bama team or a one-loss LSU team to only one another, and an undefeated Ohio State and an undefeated Oklahoma team, one of those teams getting left home to let Clemson in, and is it strictly because what they did last year and what they've accomplished over the last 4 years? Because it can't be because of what they've done this year, right?
It's the zero in the loss column, and that's whether you agree with that or disagree with that, that's ultimately how the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is operated. They have chosen the zero over the one loss when it comes to the Power Five teams, and they've chosen one loss over two loss in certain situations where Penn State could have gotten in or Georgia could have gotten in last year. And this is a situation where if you look at Clemson, it's hard to fault them, though. They've got two SEC non-conference games. I mean, they played A&M and they got to go to South Carolina at the end of the year. So it's not like they're not scheduling anybody. And A&M is probably going to wind up being 8-4 at the end of the year, and 7-5 in that area. And yeah, that doesn't look like a great record. But at the same time, I mean, well, who's Oklahoma played? UCLA, who's might be the worst team in the Pac-12, or certainly one of the couple of worst. I mean, what's Oklahoma's best non-conference win? I think Baylor and Texas, maybe some of those teams in conference are better than what Clemson has played in the ACC, but. I'll tell you what's going to be interesting. We haven't even brought their team up. Clemson's undefeated. They're in. and whoever the loser of Alabama LSU is going to be the team that's left out. Now, do I think that the Alabama LSU loser could be better than one of the better than one of those other teams? Yes, but unfortunately, the selection committee kind of uses the whole rudimentary, well, zero losses is better than one. So, and you think about it, it's something that I've talked about before as well. Like, people, well, we need a committee. We need a committee. Well, we need to change this. Well, what you're getting is an era where you and I and have all these numbers and metrics and so many different things are out there, power ratings, and so many smart numbers that are better than one-loss records. And the committee doesn't use those or recognize those. And what they have are old school coaches, old school thinking that if you win the game, that's good. And a win is better than a loss. And 13-0 is better than 12-1. And until the committee gets a little younger, a little fresher, and starts incorporating some of these things, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get college coaches who have been drilled for the 60 years that they've been involved in the game that just win the game. And the best example of the hypothetical that I'm curious to see what will wind up happening this year is if Oregon runs out and wins out, it's 12-1, and their only loss is that late loss to Auburn and Dallas at the beginning of the year, where I think a lot of people felt that Oregon was the better team that night. If Oregon somehow was in this situation where they're a one-loss team and there's another one-loss team that gets it ahead of them, what message does that say to an AD? Don't play Auburn in the non-conference. Play Weber State. Play Montana. Play North Carolina A&T, whomever, Wofford. Play one of those teams because the ultimate goal is win all of your games. Like I think when the negative of the loss outweighs the benefit of the win, it's not worth it. And I think Rob Riles said that early on. Like, the goal's to win them all, and they want the easiest path to being undefeated at Baylor, and it came back and bit them when they didn't go undefeated and run the table in the Big 12. But until the committee rewards a team for playing a difficult non-conference game and loses a close game, like a 12-1 Oregon could potentially be better than a lot of 13-0 teams out there. So we'll see. I know I'm getting way ahead of the game, but that's going to be something to pay attention to as we get closer to the end of the season. If Oregon can survive SC in a couple of weeks, if they can beat whoever it is, SC again or Utah in the Pac-12 championship game.
Last year, I was convinced that they were going to put Ohio State in over Oklahoma just because of TV ratings. Like, that's what I had sworn it had come down to, because the first few years, it was whichever team had the highest TV ratings throughout the season that ended up getting the last playoff spot. And I thought, okay, this is it, you know, and I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, a little bit. But I could have sworn that, and then they went against it and put Oklahoma in, and, you know, I think it was the right decision. But this year, they've got a safety net. Right, this committee has got this safety net of quote unquote eye test. So you can throw out everything else if you want to, and just put, they look like the better team. And I just, you're right with all the metrics. I actually tweeted something earlier that was what the BCS standings would look like right now, and the BCS standings right now would be Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Alabama 3, Clemson 4. And then you got Oklahoma and Penn State at 5-6. And people were like, you know, why would you want to use that? And da, da, da. And I look back at it, the BCS formula was perfect for
what we're doing. We just need to add two more games, two more teams.
Like, that's all it was. It was perfect.
We had to blow it up. We had to reinvent the wheel. You don't knock the house down. You just add a room.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what the interesting thing is going to be. It's going to be in a couple of weeks. If LSU wins this week, LSU is going to be number one when the first playoff rankings come out. I can guarantee
you. Oh, yes.
Because the committee will look at resume, look at the quality wins that they have. LSU will be number one in the CFP rankings if they wind up beating Auburn this week. And they'll have that bullseye when they go to Tuscaloosa in a couple of weeks. So, but yeah, what was so weird about what the committee did last year is that they contradicted themselves. Like they put Oklahoma 4. But then you put Georgia 5 and Ohio State 6. Like, you're saying Oklahoma's winning the Big 12 was what separated them from Georgia.
Yeah.
But Ohio State winning the Big Ten wasn't more impressive than what Georgia did. So I think what that told me was that they wanted to put Georgia in, but they couldn't justify it. And they were like, who do we want to put in, Ohio State or Oklahoma? Who do we think is better? And they landed on Oklahoma, so probably just because of the nature of how Ohio State lost that game to Purdue. And if you look back, I don't want to harp on last year because it's done over. Look at Ohio State during the course of the year last year. They were not an overly impressive team for a majority of the state. They could have lost to Maryland. The Michigan State game was ugly. Nebraska led them, I think, in the third quarter. There were a lot of ugly performances. Minnesota, they were not a good, dominant-type playoff team for most of the year. It took them being an underdog on their home field against Michigan, a team that they've dominated for the last 10 years, to get them to play their best game of the year. And then they beat a completely overmatched Northwestern team that, oh, by the way, was a one-possession game in the fourth quarter in the Big Ten Championship last year to get them to final. But I think if you're taking the entire body of work last year, I think the committee definitely made the right call to put Oklahoma in.
That's absolutely. This year, I mean, what you were just describing, you know, Clemson is not to that level yet. But this Clemson team reminds me of the 2014 Florida State team. I mean, it was just where they could sleepwalk through the schedule, and it's the same thing. You know, Clemson doesn't have to get ready for anything until the playoff. You know, but so long as they're undefeated, they'll be fine. They'll get in, and then they'll get to go prove it and do what they do.
That game in Columbia at the end of the year could be interesting because South Carolina did go down and they didn't play great against Athens to win, but Georgia turned the ball over and they walked out with a win. Officials certainly didn't help them out at Williams-Brice this week against Florida. There's going to be a lot on the line, and I could see South Carolina giving Clemson a game at the end of the year. That'll be really interesting, and maybe that sense of a threat will finally get Clemson to play their best game of the year. So I'm curious to see how that shakes down as the year goes on.
I think Helinski will be healthy by then. I think, 100%. Like that could make South Carolina's entire year. That could make their decade. Good gracious. All right, we've kept you for 30 minutes. I told you I'd wrap it up by 30 minutes. So we'll get out of here. I do want to get you back on again, obviously, because, hey, if you guys end up here in Memphis, we got to go get some ribs. We got to go get some chicken wings. We got, all that kind of stuff. So,
absolutely. I look forward. Hopefully that will be the case.
If we will make it happen.
I never root for a certain result or string of things, whatever. I've said it multiple times, and it's certainly not a lie. I enjoy when game day gets to new places, and anywhere we go for the first time is something that I root for. So hopefully things will work out, and the show will indeed be in Memphis next week. And if not, I certainly think there's a really good chance that I'll at least make it in for that ABC primetime game after wherever game day might be.
So, last question. I've already said last question, but if you guys only do the ABC thing here and game day ends up somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
How long are you in town for that?
Kirk and Maria and myself will fly in right after game day. So depending on where we are, we usually get there early in the afternoon, and we'll be there for the game. And then I'm sure Kirk will head home right after the game. I'll probably take a quick little flight back over to Nashville, and I'll stay the night in Memphis and fly back out to Connecticut on Sunday morning.
Okay. So I was very curious. If it's the primetime game, then you might actually have time to grab a late dinner. So we might have to make that happen. We'll see what happens.
Potentially. We'll see.
All right. That works. Again, he is Chris Felica from ESPN College Game Day and the Sanford Stephen the Bear podcast. Find him on Twitter at Chris Felica. Buddy, we appreciate you for hopping in here. We'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Take care, guys. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. Visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.